Resiste un fallo Tevez, Tevez da solo, Tevez, Tevez è lungo dell'area, li fa fuori tutti Tevez!
Welcome to another episode of More Than a Game. Today on the show, Liverpool go top of the table in their best ever start to a Premier League campaign. Meanwhile, many individual players are outscoring the entire Huddersfield team, and Fulham are leakier than most household sieves as both edge deeper into the relegation zone. In the A-League, local VAR ruins everything as more video-assisted refereeing controversy throws football fans and pundits into meltdown. Yes, it's your Australian-based home of the Premier League, the A-League, and surprisingly fewer tech issues than any professional sporting league we know, but more on that later. I'm Colby, and I'm joined today by one quarter of West Ham's Melbourne-based supporters, Tommy Close. How are you, mate?
G'day, mate. I'm well.
I'm also joined today by another quarter of Melbourne Hammers, captain of one of Victoria's most successful Metro League footballing sides, the South Yarra Casuals, friend of the pod and all-round good bloke, Tim Steers. How are you, mate?
Mate, well, thanks for the call-up. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Thanks, now, mate. Boys, we actually had our presentation last night for the mighty South Yarra Casuals. How are you feeling?
Well, mate, if either of you mention the word Negroni, I'm walking, all right? I'm just going to leave.
Bit dusty?
Yeah, a little bit dusty.
Oh, good. Now, look, we actually managed to catch a bit of football last night in addition to having a few celebratory Negronis. Why don't we get into that with our moment of the week?
All right, and Colby, so what was your moment of the week?
Moment of the week for me this week was Matt Leckie. Good old Aussie in the Bundesliga. Reached 100 Bundesliga games. He's the first Aussie to do that.
That's a big achievement, isn't it?
Massive. Like,
not a lot of
Aussies. I was really surprised to hear that as well. But so he came on off the bench for Hertha in their 1-1 draw against Brandon Borrello's SC Freiburg.
Another Aussie connection to do it.
And he joins the likes of Ned Zelic and Paul Agostino, who spent large parts of their career
in
the Bundesliga. And also Robbie Cruz. A lot of two Bundesliga for Robbie Cruz.
Also a lot of bench as well for Robbie Cruz.
A lot of bench. Great experience for him, and great to have an Australian playing week in, week out in a top league. So, yeah, that's my moment of the week.
It's been a good move for him going to Germany, hasn't it?
Huge, yeah. And he's played for sort of three clubs over there now. So, and 100 appearances doesn't sort of come for nothing. So, he's made a real go of it.
Bit of an avenue for a lot of Aussie players, isn't it? You know, Bundesliga.
Yeah,
they head over there. You know, like
there's a lot of
Rojas. Obviously, he's a Kiwi, but
same sort of route. I forgot about him. A lot of Poms are going there as well. You've got Jadon Sancho, who's killing it there, and
Lookman did a stint over there at Gladbach, I think, as well.
At Red Bull.
Leipzig.
Red Bull, yes. Leipzig. And Reece Oxford was at Mönchengladbach last year as well.
Yeah.
Didn't play a lot, but it's opening up for a lot of, I guess, English speakers.
Good route into Europe.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great.
Yeah, Stizzy, what about you?
Mate, so I picked up a moment of the week was Salah getting 50 goals for Liverpool.
Egyptian king.
Yeah, the Egyptian king. I love Salah. I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I just appreciate the way he plays football. Like, he seems to make, like, you know, cutting in off the wing, scoring goals for fun. Like, it just
always
looks
easy
for
his face.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love it. It's great. So he only had 65 appearances, smashed 50 goals. Like,
that's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah,
one season wonder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
you're twitching over here.
You sort of like you look back. I remember seeing him obviously turn out for Chelsea, and you're like, yeah, what? There was a lot of fuss about him then, and he wasn't really doing it, and he didn't get that many appearances. But
wouldn't be the first person not to do it at Chelsea, and be very successful at another club, and won't be the last.
Yeah, agreed. But yeah, no, that was my moment of the week. I thought it was great, you know, and obviously, kind of got me thinking about okay, the modern game, scoring more goals, lots of games on hand. You know, what does it mean? You see, you know, like there's other people in that sort of framework at Liverpool, sort of the older names, and you think, okay, so is it a bygone era? You know, with the amount of games they're playing, you know, it's just the amount of goals that they're scoring per game.
Records are going to get broken.
They're going to get broken,
and they're going to go higher, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. But no, it's great. It's a good achievement, I'd say.
What a moment, Tommy.
So mine this week was Ozil. absolutely tearing things up for Arsenal this week against Leicester.
I've not seen that Mesut Ozil in quite some time.
Exactly. Yeah. And
where's he been?
It's a source of frustration for a lot of Arsenal fans because they go, well, why can't he do this every week? He just looks so disinterested and just sort of lackadaisical a little bit, but even almost a little flippant. Whereas this week he was given the captain's armband and he showed up in a big way and really drove them forward on a lot of occasions. And obviously there was a couple of he got one, but then set up and was involved in a couple of special goals as well for Aubameyang as well to kill off the game. And just, it was an amazing performance, I thought. And
all-round team performance that game, Arsenal. Exactly. Absolutely on fire. And I've got a couple of stats here for you about Mesut Ozil.
Go on, then. Stat chat.
Let's hear it.
So he scored 3 in his last 4 now, which is as many as he scored in his last 22.
Wow.
So that's one thing. That just shows you where he's trending at the moment. Yeah. And he's also become the highest scoring German player in Premier League history with 30 goals. And
that's not a lot.
Not a lot for a German player. Oh, there are a lot of fantastic German players out there and in the Premier League throughout the years. But I was very surprised to read that. But there you go, Mesut Ozil.
Who's next in the German goal scorers? I've got this written down here. Bit of a quiz for you boys. Who's next on the list?
Previous player?
What do you mean?
Was he, like is he still playing? Is he current?
No, old school. Like, we're talking mid to late 90s, old school.
Klinsmann?
Well, he's in there, but he's not next in line. I'll be surprised if you get this.
No, I don't have any idea here.
The next one was who was that sort of winger forward who played for Cologne and Bayern and Arsenal? Got his name.
So next in line was in line is Uwe Rosler.
Nah, would never have
never again. Played for Man City. Played for them for quite a few seasons. He's got that real, like, if you looked at him, you'd be like, man, he's definitely German. Like, he's got that sort of that look about him, you know. He looked like he could quite easily be an assassin or something, you know.
the efficient assassin?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, he's next in line. I thought, oh, yeah, there you go.
Brilliant.
Alrighty, my own goal this week, gents, is Jukanovic, the Fulham manager, because look, Fulham started out as a bit of a pod darling, but for
They're
me, he's
now.
Well, go on. Yeah, look, him personally, because I'm starting to get really, really frustrated with Fulham, I guess generally, but specifically the manager. I mean, every week he's chopping and changing the team, specifically the back line, but also the goalkeeper as well. I think it was Rico started out the season. He only played one game, and then Bettinelli came in for about 6 or 7. Mm. And now Rico's jumped back in again, and you're sort of looking at this team. They're low on confidence. There was a sense of sort of inevitability when they conceded overnight, and things aren't looking good for them at the moment. I mean, as the season sort of progresses, my opinion of him that he's likely to be one of the first sacked is sort of hardening.
Well, the listeners of More Than a Game certainly agree. We put out a question on Friday, put out a poll, and he led the Twitter poll and the Facebook poll. So, yeah, I think he might be pretty short odds to be the first sacked.
But so it's not necessarily a specific incident, but I think the last week and maybe the last few weeks for Jukanovic count as my own goal for this week.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. Leading into the season, Fulham was the chat around Fulham was great in the transfer market. They've done so well. They've signed all these players, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And they've been a little bit. They're chopping and changing.
Well, they've been a little bit unlucky with injuries and stuff as well. Like Tom Cairney's been out injured as well, and he's a really key player for them. And they don't really have someone who can replace him. But I mean, like I said about chopping and changing with the lineup and stuff, it's killing them.
Well, like you said, Tommy, it's so important. With your back line and goalkeepers as well to be, fielding the same back line and the same keeper week in, week out.
Yeah.
And you see that with championship winning defences. They very rarely chop and change unless they have to, particularly in their back line.
Yeah.
So, I think that's definitely a bit of a fail. And they're obviously still trying to find the best defence that works for them. I think they're missing Alfie Mawson in particular.
Yeah, well, he was on the bench overnight as well.
What's he doing there? I don't know. He's obviously being eased back into the team after that injury that he had. So, it'd be good to see him back and see if Fulham can start to patch it up.
Yeah. Timmy, what about yourself? What was your own goal for this week?
Mate, I put this down because I just really wanted to talk about it. Which was...
that's a spirit.
Sounds like what I do every week.
Exactly. It's not necessarily an own goal, but I loved it. It was Brozovic's human wall. The human wall.
We got down on the ground.
Yeah. oh, I've never seen anything like it.
It was just fun, wasn't it? Just watching him throw himself on the deck.
And like, you know, Suarez goes up to take the free kick, and the wall is literally like 3 feet off the ground. Like, they're trying, like, we talk about it on the weekends, don't we, for the cash. Like no jump, stand there, nice and firm. But
just
cop
it.
just take it. But yeah, and then he's just done a nice little slide like underneath, yeah. And the ball's hit him and gone over the bar. Brilliant.
Well, some people were questioning whether or not it was planned, mm. or whether or not it was just this last minute decision that he has just unilaterally made to just throw himself on the ground, yeah. because he thinks that's what
he's thought. Well, the ball's going to jump, so I'm going to be the old draft excluder.
But I think it was planned.
The ski ramp.
Yeah.
It's actually quite lucky in how it actually panned
out. Because I actually thought it was going to bounce over him and then go over the keeper and into the goal.
It's Paul Parker all over again.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh. And Colby, what about yourself, your own goal this week?
My own goal, in what could be the last Bolt watch of More Than a Game podcast, my own goal is Usain Bolt this week, making his return to the More Than a Game podcast. So last week during Brisbane Roar and Central Coast Mariners game, it broke in sort of what's been one of the most drawn-out celebrity football trials in the history of the world, that Usain Bolt would actually be offered a contract from the Mariners. And so after that game, it broke during the game, and after the game, Central Coast's manager, Mike Mulvey, was asked about it, and he just looked completely surprised. And just sort of saying, well, who does Bolt replace in this team? You know, I don't know anything about this.
Distance himself from it.
Yeah. But I think that's illustrative of what Mulvey actually thinks about the whole situation. And while it's not unusual, obviously, for teams to have like a player shoehorned in against the manager's will, or you know, when the manager doesn't even know about it. The own goal for me is the fact that Usain's actually refused the contract on the grounds that he wanted to be paid more money. Mm-hmm. I think he's been offered like 150k contract, which is pretty low wage in A-League standards.
I think
standards.
It's about mid-tier, really. Mid-tier. Like, it's not
premium
money.
For the
Mariners,
it's probably mid-tier, I guess. But yeah, I think he wanted to be getting paid something like $3 million a year, and
that's
it's just never going to happen.
That's
insane. And look,
that's insane for the A-League, let alone for someone who has as little talent as he actually does.
Exactly what I was going to say. Not taken away from the fact that all the media surrounding him is about him as a personality and stuff, but his footballing ability is terrible. You know, like
limited.
Limited. Yeah. I think I can't remember who it was. Someone came out this week and said that he has a touch of a trampoline.
Oh, I think that was Andy Keogh.
Is that Andy
Keogh?
Irish Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's got a touch of a trampoline. So why are you offering a guy a contract?
Yeah.
When he's not that good at football.
Yeah, so I think the way that Usain's handled this whole situation just sort of hollows his stated ambition of, oh, look, I'd do anything. It's my dream to become a professional footballer. And you've got it there. You've got the contract there. All you have to do is take it. I mean, I'm sure he's doing all right for himself. I'm sure he doesn't need the money. And then to knock it back on the grounds that you want to be getting paid more, I think that's, a bit of an own goal.
Alrighty, into last night's EPL games. Colby, do you want to take us through the Liverpool-Cardiff game?
Yeah, absolutely. So, this one finished up 4-1 to Liverpool, with Klopp using this as an opportunity to rotate a few of his squad. Albi Moreno got his first start of the season, sort of much maligned Liverpool left-back, with Andrew Robertson being rested. Adam Lallana also got a start, which was nice to see, after him making a bench appearance midweek in the Champions League. Taking through a couple of highlights, 10th minute goal after a couple of shots blocked, Cardiff couldn't get it out and Salah just pounces on one at the far post. 66th minute before the next goal would be scored by Mane, just wanted it more in the box and rifled it into the far post. But in the 77th minute Cardiff would actually get one back through Callum Patterson, who was just in the right place in the right time in the box and just nicked it. Looked like it was straight through Alisson's legs to give Cardiff a sniff. But that was pretty quickly snuffed out. We're in the 84th minute. Sheridan Shaqiri receives a ball on the penalty spot. Little shimmy and just tucks it away. And then
he made that look really easy.
It looks too easy. Just put two defenders absolutely on their arse. And
he's doing all right there at the moment.
Shaqiri's bargain of the season,
yeah,
I reckon.
Agreed.
And then at the end, Mane and Salah combined on the break to put the icing on the cake. So, Liverpool now go top, obviously, with Chelsea and City still to play. It's looking pretty tight at the top, boys.
Mm. Yeah, a few points in it there.
Yeah.
Feeling pretty happy about that?
I'm feeling pretty good. it's very, very tight at the top. You've got five teams sort of only separated by a couple of points, but, I mean, great for Liverpool. You know, it's good to see them rolling on. This is their best Premier League start, or joint best since sort of 2008, 2009, I think, where they've got 26 points out of their first 10 games, essentially. So it's a fantastic start from Liverpool. Some other things coming out of the game. Obviously, Steezy, you mentioned Mo Salah's 50 that he brought up earlier in the week. Brace by Mane in this game also brought up his 50 Premier League goals. Yeah. And he's the first Senegalese player to score 50 in the Prem. So that's a great little milestone for him. And I was just thinking about other Africans who have scored over 50 in the Prem. And you've got like the likes of Yaya Toure, you've got Kanu, you've got Drogba. So he's joined a pretty prestigious club there, just quietly doing his thing while, you know, players like Salah get a lot of the attention. Mane's still... a bit of a weapon.
Yeah. Mane, he's electrifying to watch at times. He's just so quick, so powerful, so direct. He's really exciting to watch, and he's obviously a really key part of that
that front three.
Yeah, that way, also the way that they play there. And people talk about Firmino, how important he is, but you take Mane out and they're a bit of a different proposition, aren't they? Less direct and less powerful.
Yeah, it, like that goal that I think it was the first goal he scored, that was just all power. Like he rode like three challenges.
Lovely finish.
Great finish on the left peg, bang.
And there's not a lot of players that are doing that kind of thing at this level, sort of in England or any of the top leagues sort of around the world really at the moment.
Yeah, and it's not often talked about because I know he's been doing it for, you know, going on two seasons now, but he has made the switch to the left wing as well. Like his favourite position is still the right wing, and he moved over to the left to accommodate Salah when Salah came into the team, and he's just seamlessly transitioned over there. So, he's doing a fantastic job, and long may it continue. That's pretty much all I've got to say about that, boys. Why don't we move on to Leicester West Ham?
Finally, more West Ham chat.
Oh, look, yeah, this pod is needing. That's what we need. We've finally shifted the balance in this pod to West Ham, very West Ham centric today.
Now you know how I felt when Jesse and you, Colby, were on the pod. It was just Liverpool.
Oh, we've also had Damo on here, fair few Liverpool chats we got in as well. So there's a bit of that going around. All right, it's your time to shine. What if... talk us through this game, Tommy.
It was an interesting game, I guess, firstly, Arnautovic didn't make the squad at all. Now, he's been carrying a bit of an injury for the last probably month, maybe even 6 weeks, and he hasn't been 100% fit. So I think he was left out of the squad just purely with a view to the League Cup on Thursday against Spurs in mind, which Pellegrini has mentioned that he's prioritising basically the League Cup at this point. It's
needs
a competition.
To save his job, doesn't he?
Oh well, it's a competition. Easy.
He's not under pressure, is he? He is a bit.
But it's a competition that West Ham have never won. It's a competition that Pellegrini has used before at City as sort of a springboard onto sort of building the confidence and sort of a winning mentality in the squad. And obviously, very different situations. But
Spurs is a big matchup for them in the cup.
Huge. And look, it's a real opportunity for West Ham to knock off Spurs as well, because Spurs, like, they've got a pretty busy period at the moment. They're playing City this week in the league, and then they've got like sort of the local derby, which it's probably less important for Spurs, but it's something that West Ham normally always lives for. So Arnautovic wasn't named in the squad at all, but also Vardy didn't start for Leicester as well. Now, didn't catch why that was, but it meant
he jogged off early the week before.
Went out of poo, didn't he?
Yeah. He's still on the way to the loo, basically.
but it meant that it was sort of a little bit of an odd start for both teams. So, the start of the game, Leicester actually were quite comfortable and looked like West Ham could take a bit of a battering, but West Ham sort of finally grew into the game. And then on the 30th, around the 30th minute, Felipe Anderson's knocked in a ball to the back stick to Declan Rice, the 19-year-old West Ham product, and who's knocked the ball to Balbuena, the Paraguayan centre-back, who's Then played a beautiful 1-2 off the post around Schmeichel, and then slotted the ball home nicely, which is his first goal for the club. Which
good moment.
Yeah, it was an odd goal as well. Like I wish he could say that he meant it, but obviously no, he didn't. Yeah. But it was amusing.
Got to be there.
Exactly. You can only take the goals that you get given, right? But anyway, so look, I guess luck giveth and luck taketh away as well. So then 8 minutes later, Noble, is sort of reaching for a ball and has absolutely clattered one of the Leicester players and has been given a straight red. And the referee did not hesitate at all with this. And I guess, boys, this is maybe the first discussion point for the match. Mm. Like, have you seen the tackle? Did you think it was a straight red?
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting.
It was studs up, like, reasonably high. You know, it's sort of above the ankle height, I suppose, on the leg.
It's mid sort of lower leg.
It's
isn't
a bit, it? It's a bit reckless. Yeah.
I suspect the referee's given it a straight red, not necessarily because of like the speed or anything like that, but he's quite away from the ball as well, which might indicate that he wasn't in control. And as soon as you're sort of out of control and just lunging at the ball, referees tend not to have a lot of sympathy for you. That, mate, you're way off this. Like, you've absolutely clattered the bloke. So, look, for me, it totally sort of interrupted the flow of the game as well, because at that point West Ham were looking pretty comfortable and you sort of thought, oh geez, like, we might get another here. But it really threw up the whole pattern of the game into sort of disarray. And
very
West Ham
early in the game too.
Yeah, well, it was only the 38th minute. Yeah. So
after scoring as well, it's just not
8 minutes after scoring. So look, obviously it would have been better for it to have happened
8 minutes before the final whistle. Yeah.
But it wasn't to be. And actually, interesting enough, it means that Noble's now the most sent off West Ham player, overtaking Steve Lomas. And now he's been sent off 5 times in his career, which quite a lot.
Bad boy.
Yeah.
Has played at the club for a long time. But he's good for at least one or two sort of every few years.
It's funny, you think of Mark Noble as a character. He doesn't strike me as a West Ham hard man. You think of Julian Dix.
Yeah.
Razor Ruddock, all that sort of stuff. But obviously he likes getting sent off.
Early bath.
Just loves throwing a foot in.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so look, having one less player, and they didn't really change up the shape a hell of a lot.
Rice just had to do a lot more work, didn't he?
Pretty much. And look, he's just done so well this season. And I think he did really admirably as well. With Yarmolenko injured, it meant that Grady Diangana came into the side. So there were a couple of teenagers there. And I think both of them did really, really well. Diangana got hooked sort of midway through the second half for Antonio to come on. And also a couple of defenders as well, just to shore things up. It meant that West Ham really were up against it in that second half. And Fabianski ended up making 7 saves, which it was probably indicative of how West Ham really just had their backs up against the wall.
I think he's made the second most saves in the league this season behind our favourite Joe Hart.
Yeah. And look, I've said it before that Fabianski he's really brought...
Big get for West Ham.
Brought a real calmness and quality to the defence, which is kind of weird given how many goals we conceded sort of in the early games. But I actually think that... So, Balbuena, Diop and Fabianski, I think, are now forming actually quite a good little sort of defensive unit there. And I think Masuaku is probably the weakest link there now in that sort of back five. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 12 months he actually gets replaced, because sort of outside of that, he's definitely the weak link. But anyway, so look, Leicester did finally equalise sort of late in the game with a fantastic strike with about 10 minutes to go from Wilfred Ndidi.
It's pretty cruel deflection though, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's you know who it deflected off as well? Fabian Balbuena, the goal scorer. So, like I said, luck giveth, luck taketh away as well. And look, I think when you have a player sent off and you're really riding your luck for probably the next 60 minutes, a point on the road is probably not a bad result, and I think a lot of West Ham fans would probably be happy with that. Probably more disappointed that probably weren't able to go on with the job. But
yeah, you're always disappointed after you go up early and you're hanging in there to almost the 90th minute, feeling like you could get a pretty undeserved win, I suppose, given the circumstances. But yeah, as you say, Tommy, they'll settle for a point on the road. But yeah, boys, I mentioned this before. You don't think there's a little bit of pressure stacking up on Pellegrini at all?
Oh, totally. I think there is. Like, he's under pressure, but I guess at the same time, he has said multiple times, and this is probably to take the pressure off a little bit, is that he sees this as a 3-year project. the squad needs still probably another $100 million to be spent in the next two windows, in the next two summer windows. So,
and his recruitment's been quite good, right? With Yarmolenko, I think, was a brilliant signing, as well as Felipe Anderson, obviously. Fabianski is a great signing. So the business, and you know, obviously you guys know, but the business that West Ham have been doing as, under Pellegrini so far has been pretty good.
But you're right, I think, Tommy. I think if, like, a couple more signings, like if you're lining up against the Prem side and you've got Chicharito up top, you're like, oh, what, you know, he's a good striker, but he's not a game changer.
Well, and the thing is that he needs so much to be built for him.
Yeah.
He Arnautovic, you can give him the ball against five defenders and every couple of games, he's probably going to actually score for you, which is testament to how good Arnautovic actually is. But Chicharito is not that kind of player and needs a lot of help to... He will score
He'll
goals.
He'll sniff a goal out for sure.
Exactly, but yeah, he needs a lot of help and to be able to do that. So, yeah, look, onwards and upwards for West Ham. Like, this is coming off, a pretty low base the last couple of seasons. But, I mean, the building blocks are there for improvement this season. Yeah. So
I think Pellegrini's the type of manager that the club would give time to. Like, he's got that. He's not, you know...
He's got a good pedigree. Yeah, exactly. He was a big get for the club as well. Absolutely. So,
like, they kind of have to as well because they pay him a mint as well. Yeah. So they can't really sack him.
No.
Boys, I'll tell you who doesn't have a problem scoring a goal. Podcast favourite, Glenn Murray.
Oh, here we go.
Who happened to get one in their results against Wolves. 1-0 to Brighton at home at the Fortress Amex.
Yeah, and more points at home for Brighton, who just keep on getting results at home, don't they? It's
another
incredible.
Another clean sheet for Matty Ryan with a few crucial saves in there as well. So, yeah, this is another crucial win for them. They're now 9 points above relegation zone after 10 games. Are they staying up?
Well, I mean, they keep going the way they are. Like, you know, they're playing good football. And that's the key for any side that sort of battle it, or you assume would battle in the bottom half of the table. Having a great home record is what you rely on. You know, you want to try and scrap points away if you can, but the ones that stay up,
maybe
they turn the stadium's a fortress. You know, you know you're going to be in trouble if you go there, you know.
And look, they're not conceding a lot of goals either. Like, they're doing pretty well, Brighton. Yeah. Like, I think Chris Hughton's done a really, really good job. Yeah. And I mean, they've
not much as well. I mean, like, we say this almost every podcast, but, you know, year after year, game after game, to get this much of a tune out of the likes of Glenn Murray, a sort of championship journeyman, is such a credit to Hughton, I think, and a credit to the way this whole team's playing together as well.
Agreed. Was it is his 100th goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Murray's 100th goal. He's the second highest goal scorer for Brighton now, behind young Tommy Cook, never heard of.
You haven't heard of Tommy Cook? Oh, legend. No.
Absolute Brighton legend. Sorry to all the Brighton listeners out there who I've just offended, but you know, it wouldn't be the first time. Wolves, on the other hand, have now lost two on the bounce. So are things starting to go a bit stale for them, or is this just a bit of a blip?
I watched the game, and I thought that they bossed the first half hour. Mm. I thought that they had a fair few chances. And we're unlucky not to get a goal. Couple of chances went begging, actually.
Yeah, so, they put a couple wide, didn't they?
And they've got enough flair in their squad to get goals as well. So, yeah, I think for them, I think that they've got time on their side, and I think they've got enough about them to stay up, you know, and to keep getting points. But yeah, as you say, not a good string of results last couple. So. Yeah.
Look, Wolves have conceded the fifth fewest goals in the league, and look, they're not scoring a lot. But when you're sort of that skint, when it comes to sort of conceding goals, you're always gonna be in with a shout. And look, they've got enough quality there with Jimenez that
I mean, they're mid-table at the moment, so
I think they're sitting pretty comfortable.
Yeah, 15 points. You know, they're well on their way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so nothing too much to worry for Wolves.
Very comfortable.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of a team who might be in a little bit more trouble than Wolves, Fulham went down 3-0 at home to Bournemouth.
They were really comfortable in this, Bournemouth. Like, so probably say a pretty easy win for them. Like, Callum Wilson got two goals, including a penalty. One for David Brooks as well, who I think he's giving Kearney and Madison a run for sort of best sort of promoted player from the championship this season. He's doing really well. I mean, I already talked in my own goal segment about Sergio Rico, how the goalkeeper situation's chopping and changing, and the Fulham defence has been sort of all over the shop, both from the manager's perspective, chopping and changing, but also they're just conceding so many goals. They've conceded 28 so far. It's the equal top most after 10 games, equal with Barnsley from 97-98 and Southampton 2012-13.
Barnsley?
Wow. Yeah, and...
yeah, you don't want to be equal with Barnsley and Southampton in the goals conceded
stakes.
Exactly, and right. I guess further to my own goal stuff, like they've got City in the League Cup this week, which you go, well, is Guardiola going to send out the kids or is he going to send out a second string side, which will probably still tonk them?
Yeah.
But then they play Huddersfield in the league on Monday week as well, and you think, well, geez, that's lining up to be such a crucial game for both teams. And you sort of think, well, could Jukanovic maybe not last past Huddersfield if they don't even get a point or anything out of it?
You'd think that's a pretty crucial fixture, wouldn't you?
So crucial. And I mean, Wagner's got some runs on the board, whereas Jukanovic, I think he's been really disappointing, I think, this season. Like, at first we said how brave it was that he keeps sending out this attacking team and how they want to play football the right way, but it comes to a point where you say, well, sort of the definition of insanity or stupidity is sort of doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. But, like I've said before how frustrated I am, but like he needed to sort of change things up and say, all right, we're not going to play the same way all the time. Let's go in fits and starts so that like we're in these games for longer periods and makes them a little bit more sort of more difficult to play against as well, because like then they can sort of change the tempo and whereas they're just a mess at the moment. But look, Bournemouth on the other hand have just been just keep on keeping on, don't they? Like I think we all thought that they were going to struggle, but they've since jumped up to sixth.
Yeah, they're pretty classy too in the way that they're performing. They're not in getting the wins, but they're getting them in style. Yeah. They're scoring a couple good of goals football, most games. Wilson has been fantastic.
Where's he come from? Like, I was looking at him online, and I was like, he's played no games in his professional career. Really,
he's injured a fair bit. Hasn't he?
Yeah, he had a couple of bad. I think they were knee injuries. I think they might have even been back to back. So he did miss. I think it was a good almost 2 years.
Yeah, right.
Which look the he's mental Welsh, toughness. I think he's English.
I thought he was English.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's English, yeah. But the mental toughness to come back from some of those really bad injuries, especially knee injuries, just shows how mentally tough he is and to continue on.
Great finishes as well. Good in front of goal.
Well, he's had more score involvements in the Premier League this season than any other English player. He's been involved 9 times in 10 matches. So that just shows you the kind of streak he's on.
Yeah.
He's not really even mentioned when it comes to sort of England squads as well. Which
no chat about him. That's
kind of surprises me a little bit. I mean, yeah, Kane's sort of undroppable. But at the same time, we've mentioned how many times on this podcast about Kane needs a break. And like, what happens to England if Kane's injured?
Yeah. Different prospect altogether, isn't it? Really?
Exactly. That's the fallback at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But
the winger
such
up
different
front.
Players, right? And
yeah, they are.
It's just
get Heskey out of retirement.
Bring him back.
Watford Huddersfield. So
Watford got up here 3-0. Looked pretty comprehensive. Huddersfield didn't really threaten. Goals for Poirier, De La Feu, and Isaac Success.
Great success.
Good for him to get on the score sheet. So Watford have now got 19 points from their opening 10 games. They're sitting 7th. They're 4 points clear of Everton, who are behind them in 8th place. They're doing pretty well, and we're Team Watford here at More Than A Game.
How weird was Pereira's goal though? He just kind of seemed
to
just
through the whole team.
Yeah. It was bizarre. Like I'm watching this going, is anyone even going to try to tackle him? Exactly. And like
he's like, right, I'm having this.
He's gone past about 4 or 5 guys, and I was just like, I was sitting there thinking that, like, imagine what the Huddersfield manager Wagner's got to be thinking. Like he would have absolutely torn them to shreds. Hopefully after that, because that was terrible defending. Yeah. And look, he's a tricky player, so
in the
a
box,
little bit technical,
get a bit scared of putting a leg in.
But geez, come on, like he wasn't doing anything particularly special with the ball,
So Pereira's outscored Huddersfield now. He's got 6 goals for the season, and Huddersfield as a team have got 4 goals for the season.
Wow.
So doesn't that show you what a crisis Huddersfield are in terms of their goal scoring? Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure even Mitrovic has scored more goals than Huddersfield.
So is Glenn Murray. There are quite a few players in the Premier League now have scored more goals than Huddersfield. So
that's worrying as a top flight side.
Yeah, surely Huddersfield have to go to the market in January and get themselves a striker who can score goals.
Yeah.
Not just that, but at least last season they were pretty good defensively. Like they were reasonably tough to break down, but
and
they've been taunted a couple of times already this season.
And De Poitre to nick a goal for them here and there, but it just isn't happening for either of those two guys at the moment.
It's not happening at either end, really, is it?
Yeah.
No.
So Huddersfield, we think they're going down.
Yep.
Things, yeah.
They're cooked.
They're in big trouble already.
From an Australian perspective, who picks up Moy? He's too good to go back down to the Championship. Who takes him if Huddersfield go down? Does he get snapped up by another Premier League club? Do West Ham take him?
I would love him at West Ham. Yeah. I think he's the right age. I think he'd fit
in.
He's a good Noble replacement.
Yeah.
Sort of box-to-box midfielder.
Start rotating Noble with him would be good, I think.
He can take set pieces.
Yeah.
I actually think there's a lot of clubs that would look at him and go, yeah, for the right price, we'd take him. He's probably going to play 20 games a season for most teams. I mean, maybe outside of the top six.
How old is he now? What's he, sort of late 20s?
20, he's 27, 28, yeah.
So that's prime of your career, like, you know. Not
good, good 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Left I don't think you pay over 30 mil for him either, to be honest.
No.
If Huddersfield get relegated, I think you'd probably pick him up for 10 to 15.
Yeah, because if they go down in like a blaze of glory, then he's going to be cheap.
Although Huddersfield, I think they haven't gone out and broken the bank on anyone in particular. So I think if they went down, they'd probably be pretty confident of holding on to a lot of their squad.
Mm. Yeah.
You'd hope so. I mean, they don't have a lot of players other than Moy, and maybe Pritchard as well might get picked up by another club, I'd say. But
Pritchard, I think. He's a
Championship player as well.
I guess this is one of the problems for clubs like Huddersfield, Newcastle, Cardiff as well. There's a lot of players that
Cardiff is a straight-up Championship squad, right?
Well, yeah, but like they're very good for the Championship, but they're not quite good enough for the Premier League. And you go, well, you're kind of in that nowhere area where you're not really good. Like, you're too good for one, not good enough for the other, and you just end up yo-yoing between them, or sort of bouncing from Championship-winning team to Championship-winning team kind of thing. Mm. Anyway.
All right, well, rounding out the overnight games was Southampton and Newcastle who played out one of the most boring nil-all draws that you could pretty much ever see. The only question that I have, boys, around this game was which manager is going to be more frustrated by this result?
Well, I think Rafa came out saying it was positive.
He came out on the road for Newcastle.
It's actually a positive result for us, so, yeah.
I think deep down he's probably fuming.
Yeah, well, this is Newcastle's worst start for like 120 years or something. They haven't won in any of their opening 10 games, so that puts them back to like 1898-99 flight campaign in terms of the poor start that they've had. So,
what's going on for them, boys? Like, what's happening at Newcastle? Like,
it just seems to be the Ashleys, right? They're not opening up the purse strings.
They've actually made a profit in terms of transfers in the last, I think, 18 months. And I was like, are you kidding me? Mm. Like, I don't know. Like, he's been talking about trying to sell the club for like a long time now, almost 2 years. Yeah. And look, you're not going to get a good price if you're five games off of getting relegated to the Championship.
Yeah, I think, and I've said this on previous podcasts as well, I think Newcastle are a club that could really implode if Rafa walks, or if they look like they're flirting with relegation sort of after Christmas time. You know, because the fans at the moment, from what I'm sort of seeing, seem to be behind Rafa, sort of recognising that he's a bit hamstrung by the owners, and they've all sort of said that they'll boycott games if Rafa goes, and they're looking like they're going to get relegated. And so I think it'd get ugly.
Mm. Yeah, agreed.
Big, boisterous fan base there, and like we know how passionate Geordies are, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, boys, moving on to preview then for a couple of the games remaining in match day 10. We've got Burnley-Chelsea coming up, so Burnley hosting Chelsea. There's a bit of an injury cloud over Hazard with a back injury, and I think Robbie Brady's fit for Burnley. Lennon's unavailable for them. But Burnley haven't beaten Chelsea at home for over 35 years.
What do you
think is going to happen in this one? You think they're going to break the curse against the freewheeling Chelsea?
I think they wouldn't risk Hazard for this match because they've got a ready-made replacement on the bench in Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who scored a hat-trick midweek in the Europa League. So I think they'll be very comfortable with that. Send him in there and their new potent secret weapon.
Do you reckon they'll start him?
Why not?
Lofty.
Why not? He'd be Lofty. Full of confidence.
Throw him in. I wanted to talk about this, right?
Give it Lofty.
Yeah, this is ridiculous, right? Before he went to score a hat-trick midweek, right, they're talking about him. He needs to go. He needs to get game time. He needs to go to another club, another Prem club, or overseas, you know. And then he goes and scores a hat-trick, and they're like, oh. And the, you know, pundits are like, oh, it's great. It's an Englishman scoring a hat-trick and all that sort of stuff. But it was against an average side.
They were
midweek.
Romanian or Bulgarian or something.
A couple of traffic cones.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
goat herders.
He hasn't started a game against top four this season, I don't think. So,
I don't think he started at all in the Premier League, has he?
Yeah, exactly. So,
and this probably speaks wider, doesn't it, about English players in the Premier League and them not wanting to go out into Europe. And, you know, we were talking before about the Bundesliga and English players there. We could name like two of them off the top of our heads and there's probably not many more household names, at least, you know, playing in the Bundesliga and other top European leagues. But, yeah, I think you're right. More English players, if they're not getting game time in their clubs in the Prem, should go out and knock on the door elsewhere and get that experience.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a group of hardcore English fans going, oh, I can't believe the Germans are actually playing our players.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
So I think Chelsea are going to win 2-0 quite comfortably here, even without Hazard.
Yeah, I'm going to say 3-0.
Yeah, I'll probably go 2-0, actually. That's a good shout. Away from home, couple of goals, walk away with the points.
No problem. All right.
Next up, we've got Crystal Palace and Arsenal. Arsenal are looking to add to their run of consecutive wins. So if they get up against Palace here, they'll make it 12 wins in a row. So that'll be the first time they've done 12 in a row since October 2007. Whereas Palace are on the back of losing 3 on the bounce, and they've got Max Meyer out, Sorloth out, and Benteke still nursing a knee injury. What do we think, boys?
So we were just talking about Huddersfield and how few goals they've actually scored. Palace have got the next fewest goals scored. They've only scored 5 goals this season.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which blows
isn't it?
My mind how they've got 7 points.
Yeah, that's right.
And surely it's Zaha who's got all of those as well, you'd think.
Yeah, and look on Premier League today, they did a really good analysis of Fulham and their forward play this season, because they do have two wingers sort of playing as strikers. And it means that because, like, naturally they're sort of gravitating towards the channels and they're comfortable playing out wide and getting the ball out there and how they always want it to feet and stuff like this. And they showed up sort of how their instincts are leading them away from those opportunities or being in the right place where a striker scores goals, which is just like around the penalty spot on the 6-yard box. And it was really insightful for me, because we always talk about sort of that idea of a striker being in the right place at the right time, but this sort of broke it down a little bit and I was like, oh wow, this is really interesting. Recommend you check it out, guys. But
thanks, mate.
thanks for the tip.
But look, I can't see Arsenal just killing it at the moment, and they keep going from strength to strength. And
under the radar, aren't they?
Well, not anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, like, they're out now.
Yeah, exactly. But I can't see Palace putting up much of a fight here. I think this will be 3-0 to Arsenal.
Yeah,
I agree.
I reckon they'll get a goal. I reckon Palace has got a goal in them.
Zaha will be playing. So
I reckon I'm going to go 3-1.
Got some threat up front.
Alrighty, Everton and Man United. Gents, what do you think?
Good. It's a good clash, I reckon. We were just saying Everton just come off the back of a good win at Palace. United clearly struggling massively. Obviously, they lost to Juve midweek. Could have been more.
Should have been more.
Lots of intrigue around Mourinho. Like, I know you guys have talked
about non-stop, right?
Yeah, we talk about it non-stop on the pod every week.
Lots of intrigue. I love that. That's great. The drama. But no, I think it's going to be a good game. I'm not sure about score. I'd probably actually go 2-1 United after having that result midweek. I think they'll probably come out and look to, you know, stake a claim and say something to the league, you know. Like,
Could this follow the same pattern as the Newcastle game a few weeks ago where Everton go up like 1-2 nil, and then Man United finally wake up and then start playing football.
Wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be much closer than this match was last year when the teams met and United spanked Everton 4-0.
Oh, geez.
I mean, a much closer affair. Yeah, I think 2-1 as well, boys.
Yeah.
2-1 to Man United?
2-1 to Man United.
Fair enough. All right, I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1? Give us a bit more. Why are you saying 1-1?
Pressure on Mourinho.
Because I think Man United have got a goal in them. I think they're not going to play particularly well, but I don't think Everton have got... I don't think they're good enough to be able to, one, keep a clean sheet, and also to score a bunch of goals against them.
Yeah.
They're good, but not good enough to be able to put them away.
No.
All right, then. Well, in probably the game of the round, boys, to finish it off, we've got Spurs hosting City. So Spurs, teetering on the edge of dropping out of the Champions League, but just 2 points, I think, separates the top five at the moment. And the crazy thing is, Spurs are another one who have been sort of going under the radar. If they beat City, they'll go above them to go equal second. But I don't know if Spurs are going to be able to do the job. City just looking too good at the moment.
They're just different class at the moment, City. Absolutely. They really are. And Spurs, I get a sense that they've had the same squad for quite a few seasons now, and I get the sense that they're probably teetering on the edge of maybe a bit of a shake up, like bringing some new talent. They didn't do much in the transfer market.
I got Lamella, who was practically a new signing.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Dust him off. Dust him
out. It's every fan's worst nightmare when their manager says that, which means you're not getting any new players, mate.
Yeah.
But look, Ali's expected probably. Well, I'd say he's unlikely to play. He's a big loss for them. Eriksen, I think, he's still kind of finding his feet after a few weeks out. Lamella's been very good recently for them, but Moura's kind of dropped off a little bit.
They've got Vertonghen and Danny Rose out.
True.
So they're not playing in the back line, so that'll make a difference. We're against a great City side already. You know, that's going to make a difference.
With a heavy run of fixtures, as we said before, for Spurs, you need those kind of players to rotate there. So they might be looking a little bit tired as well. So I think Spurs are going to have to have their best game, and City are going to have to sort of slip up for it to be anything other than a City win. I'd say 3-1 to City.
I'm going 2-1. 2-1 City.
I think 2-0 to City.
Yeah.
All right, up next, we'll talk through Champions League group stage match day 3.
All right, boys, let's get into Champions League. What's happening, Colbs? Talk to me.
Oh, mate, look, fair bit happening, actually. a lot happened on the group stage match day 3, but we might just whip through the sort of results that we found most interesting or relevant and just chat about those and what it means for the standings and, just banter about whatever we want. Right. So, first of all, Real Madrid under a bit of pressure against the Czech side, Victoria Plzeň. I'm sure I pronounced that exactly right. Madrid did get up
2-1.
Plzeň. So Madrid...
I'll see myself out. That was fucking awful, wasn't it?
Oh, God. Yeah, Tommy, one of your finest moments. All right, yeah, Madrid got up 2-1. The interesting thing to me was, there's a fair bit of pressure on them. It was their first goal in probably like 4 or 5 games, I think.
Which is unreal, isn't it? Yeah. Like, they've still got so much quality.
Yeah. Team in mourning, though. Let's say that. They're a team in mourning. Yeah. They're still, you know, figuring it out.
Big hole.
Big breakup for them.
Yeah. but I think if Plzeň had a decent striker, this match could have been much different. I think Madrid is still in trouble based on the performance that I saw in this game. They're now joint top of Group G with Roma, both on 6 points. Roma obviously got up 3-0 against CSKA Moscow in their fixture. Obviously, boys, Real Madrid are going through the group, and typically we see in the Champions League that they're a team who finds their straps much later on in the competition, as they did last year and won it, having won it, you know, back-to-back, three Champions Leagues in a row? Yeah. So they're definitely not a team to be underestimated, but the no CR7 factor is big.
It's funny, you know, we say like they're a team in crisis, and they are in the league. But they're still coming top of the group.
Yeah. They're in a crisis relative to Real Madrid standards.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. All right, next game.
Sorry, while we're on the topic of Real Madrid, though, we just said, like, they're really comfortable in the Champions League at the moment, but they've got the Super Classico coming up overnight against Barca, and I think that could... It could be the end of Lopetegui if it sort of goes a little bit pear shaped.
Yeah, it's going to be a good litmus test. Like, where are they at?
Because in the league, like, I think they're eighth. They're, I think, 9 points short of Barcelona and Atleti at the moment. Mm. They're really struggling.
Yeah.
Sorry. No.
league segue from
No, Messi, no Ronaldo in that one. And a lot of pressure on Lopetegui, as you say. A lot of pressure on Jose Mourinho as well after United lost at home to Juve 1-0. Boys, this one could have been a bit more as well, don't you think? 1-0 was a bit of a flattering scoreline to United despite losing at home.
Yeah, Mourinho said that, we're completely on a different level to Juve.
And that's the other thing that I wanted to mention about this game, Tommy, actually, was that, before the game, I think Jose Mourinho came out and said, Juventus are head and shoulders above us. We're competing with Valencia for second place. Mm. If I'm a United fan, I'm not happy with that. I think that's just really unambitious statement for a manager of Manchester, a club of Manchester United's sort of stature.
The richest club in the world.
And you're saying you're competing with Valencia, who are fucking like fifth or something in La Liga to get through the group stage of the Champions League. That's not good enough.
No, not good enough. Especially, He's saying these things, and he's invested a lot of money since he's come in, Mourinho, over the last
couple of years. Can't cry poor, can he?
No, you can't say we're not competing with Madrid. Well, you know, the infrastructure's there, and you should be. You know, that, as you said, the fans are just be going, what are we doing?
Your aim should be so much higher than that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not a United fan for many reasons, but particularly, with stuff like this coming out of the club, you must just be pulling your hair out.
Yeah. But then, reality check, they go and play Juve, and they look poor. Yeah. So, he's a realist.
It's funny, I actually think like some of Mourinho's comments at Man United have affected his own players more than the opposition. I mean, that kind of a comment is definitely meant to ring around more in Turin than Manchester. Mm. And they're meant to say, oh yeah, Man United, they're a shadow of seasons past, we should be able to stroll past them, and then they catch them off guard. But I think it's affected the Manchester United players more than the opposition. So you'd say, well, mate,
looks like they believe it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just amazing.
Backs to the wall for United that whole game, and Juventus had their shooting boots on, it could have been a lot worse.
Mm. Speaking of teams that did have their shooting boots on, thanks, Colby. Nice setup there. was Dortmund, who absolutely spanked Atletico Madrid, their worst loss under Simeone.
Yeah.
4-0. Jadon Sancho getting on the score sheet again as well. He's doing really, really well for him. Second mention. Brits on tour.
Brits on tour, love it.
not good times for Atleti in the Champions League at the moment. Still doing quite well in the league though.
They're looking like solid second place. I mean, Monaco and Club Brugge in the group.
Yeah,
I reckon they'll still.
You know, don't see either of those teams going through. Monaco have just been picked clean, obviously.
Thierry Henry
coming in. Not, I don't know what he can do in his first job. Yeah.
Well, he wouldn't be putting a lot of emphasis on the Champions League because they're really struggling in the league.
See how you go.
Yeah.
He's just focusing on putting a squad together, Henry, I think now. A bit of a project there as well.
Yeah.
PSV Spurs played out a 2-2 draw where Spurs were actually up on the road at PSV before Hugo Lloris had an absolute brain fade and took out someone outside of the box and got himself sent off.
This could have gone either way in terms of it being a dangerous tackle or denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, I thought. Like,
clear red, though.
Just, what is he doing?
Definitely a red card.
Lost the plot?
Yeah, completely lost the plot.
Meanwhile, Barcelona and Inter faced off, and Barcelona got up 2-0 without Messi. Steezy, no Messi, no worries?
No Messi, I think it was going into this match, I was thinking, hey, it's going to be interesting to see how Barcelona fare without Messi, but they showed that they've just got class depth in the squad. Mm. Inter kind of looked like a bit of, the sort of classic Italian side coming into Europe where, they're set up defensively. Perisic, class, he showed moments where he had a couple of good chances, but Barcelona just picked them apart. You know?
Yeah, cut above, aren't they?
Yeah.
And Inter have been going all right, actually. I think they've won sort of four or five on the bounce in the Serie A at the moment as well. So, look, they're doing okay as well. But, when you're playing Barca at home, 2-0 is probably a fair result if Barcelona are in the mood.
And I think even without Messi, like, I think the team talk's almost done for the manager because they go, all right, we don't have Messi this week, boys. You need to show the world that you're more than just Messi, that we are more exactly than right. just Messi. Boys, we said it, but I don't want to leave it out. Barca's stats for results in Europe without Messi, of only 22 games since Messi made his debut without Messi. Without Messi, they've had 17 wins and only 3 losses in that time period.
So still a great record.
Massive, isn't it?
Just goes to show that you've got, you know, Messi's the icing on the cake, obviously, and is the one who's been able to take them to really great heights as a club, but you've still got to have that really quality team built around him.
And then Rafinha, the guy, he actually came in for Messi, scored the first goal in the game, and he was actually on loan at Inter.
So he was
there for a period of time. Which is a bit of intrigue, a good bit of background, but just goes to show they put someone in for Messi, he scores within 30 minutes. That's
shows the depth of that squad as well, isn't it?
Moving on now to the next group. Liverpool got the business done against Red Star. Red Star didn't put up much of a fight, so Liverpool got up 4-0 at home at Anfield. Pretty regulation. Salah, as you said before, Steezy, this is when he notched up his 50th goal in just 65 games in all competitions, so great for them. But the real story in this group was PSG against Napoli, who played a 2-2 draw, dropping points. So it's still definitely a three-horse racing group C now, with Liverpool on top on 6 points, Napoli on 5 points, PSG on 4, but with PSG and Napoli still to play Red Star home and away. Who do you see is going through in this group?
That's a great question. I mean, like that 2-2 draw, I mean, Di Maria stole it at the end, didn't he?
So yeah, right at the last, finish.
Yeah, great
Napoli
goal.
Napoli would be so disappointed.
They'd be gutted. They'd be gutted, you know, 3 points away.
Especially at PSG. That's a dream,
But it's so close, isn't it? You know, 6 points for Liverpool, 5 Napoli, PSG on 4. It's tricky. And Napoli, tough side to go and play. So PSG have got to go there and get a result. It's difficult. I might actually say Napoli and Liverpool go through there, PSG. Not seen going out.
Yeah, that would spell the end for Tuchel at PSG. You'd think, wouldn't it? If they don't make it through the group stage, he's in there to
possibly Neymar as well. Like he might go. Yeah. Let's be honest.
That's absolutely disastrous for PSG if they don't get through the group stage. But it's quite a tough group.
It might be on the cards though. Yeah, tough group.
Especially with Ancelotti doing great things at Napoli, a lot faster than most people thought he would as well. Absolutely. So, that's. That'd be a really interesting one to watch in match day 4.
Okay, straight on to the A-League now. So, it's been, 5 games since we last spoke on the pod. So, Wellington Phoenix beat Newcastle 2-1. The Roar and Central Coast played out a 1-1 draw. Glory and Western City Wanderers in the Popovich Derby also played out a 1-1 draw. Adelaide and Newcastle on Friday night played out also a 1-1 draw.
A few of them knocking
and guess what the scoreline was in the Melbourne City Central Coast Mariners game?
Oh, mate, tell me.
1-1. In fact, of the 8 games played so far in the A-League so far this season, 5 of them have been 1-1 draws.
That's not great for the branding of the A-League, is it? Well,
and it says that like these teams are still really rusty, I think. Yeah. That there's not a lot of great defensive play and also there's not a lot of great attacking play as well. So, look, it's a little bit concerning that we're into the second round. But anyway, look, the big discussion or the big game of this week was the Sydney Derby.
Yeah,
Sydney versus Western City Wanderers. So, look, it finished up 2-0. But, look, I think the result was probably of less interest and more the actual main incident of interest was Western City Wanderers, the disallowed goal. Colby, do you want to...
Yeah. So, talk us through it. As you mentioned, this is clearly the game of the weekend so far. It'd be Sydney who'd get this win under pretty controversial VAR circumstances. This is the first derby of the season, obviously, first Sydney derby in the A-League. obviously with the Sydney Derby and the W League being played out on Thursday night. This was also the first game of football at the SCG in over 30 years, and you could sort of tell from the pitch as well. There's clearly a wicket growing under there.
Yeah.
It was played out to a crowd of just over 30,000 in the 46,000-seater capacity stadium. So, look,
it's a good turnout.
It's not a bad turnout, but in such a big stadium, and these are some of the off-field talking points that we might have been talking about were it not for this massive VAR controversy. So, Why don't we get into that? So, yeah, Sydney had taken a 2-0 lead thanks to goals shortly after kickoff and shortly after halftime by Adam Lafondre and Alex Brosk. So then with plenty of time left to play in the second half, I think it was sort of around the 60th minute, Rolly Bonavazia looks to have got Western Sydney back into it on the end of a pretty neat cutback with a nice first-time finish. However, the VAR would intervene and Chris Beath, the referee, would ultimately rule that Joshua Soterio was deemed to have infringed Michael Zullo in the lead-up to the goal, and then he called the goal back and disallowed it. That really just sucked the life out of the game and really killed off any momentum that Western Sydney were hoping to have, and Sydney ended up riding out a 2-0 result. So I guess, boys, first of all, talking about the VAR itself and why it's there. It's there, as we know and we've been told time and time again, it's there to correct a clear and obvious error. So you have to sort of look at the event in real time and sort of say, look, was it a foul? And if it's not called as a foul, which it wasn't by the match referee or the linesman, was it a clear and obvious error that needed to be pulled back by the VAR? So neither the ref or the linesman called it, as I mentioned. But when you do call in the VAR, you've got to get the right result as well. So, if you don't, then I think you've really stuffed it up,
bottled it.
Yeah.
Mm. Colby, you and I were watching this together, and both of us kind of looked at each other as this was all sort of playing out, and we both looked at each other and thought, bloody hell's going on here? Because it wasn't particularly obvious sort of what was actually happening, and sort of a lot of the replays of the actual incident aren't particularly good either.
We didn't know whether they were looking at the offside or whether they were looking at the incident between Soterio and Zullo off the ball. I think if you get out the rules, I mean, technically the infringement, you could have considered that a foul, and that would have stopped the play and therefore not led to the goal. I think maybe that's the thinking, but I mean, what's Soterio got to do? He's standing there. He's just standing his ground, watching the ball be played to the player in front of him. He's coming back from an offside position. Zullo runs into him. Zullo's never getting to that ball if Soterio is not there anyway. For me, that's not a foul, and it's certainly not a clear and obvious error if technically it is a foul that needs VAR to jump in and adjudicate it. And what's more, Tommy, I think you were sort of just getting onto it then. There was no clarification provided on the pitch about what was happening, what the referee was looking at. So people were sitting there for a couple of minutes not knowing what was going on. And it was only like 30 minutes after the game where the ref came out and actually explained what his thinking was and explained the decision. And people were just left scratching their heads before that.
It's been almost 24 hours sort of since the incident, and I wonder if, like the Melbourne Derby, if we're likely to see the A-League come out and say, yeah, we've cocked this one up. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, they did. They admitted it after the Melbourne Derby, didn't they?
Exactly, but it'd be interesting to see if they do the same with this one because, public opinion is not... not real friendly with this one, as we saw with Bozza on Fox Sports. He was blowing up about it. We might play some of that clip now, yeah?
This cannot continue. You will not have a game, all right? And this is all our livelihoods. But the most important thing out of all of this, like we said before with the banning process, you've got to get it. No fans, no game, all right? They are the number ones. If they do not like something, like they're not liking this, in these droves, and you stand back and say, bad luck to them, they're going to walk away. Okay, this is not Europe, where it is the number one game. We are at the, well, probably the number four game, equal with rugby union, I would say at the moment. Is that being fair? Okay, people have got other choices, okay? And they are spending so much money, some of these kids, these parents on their kids, fees and that, and we're asking them to pay money to go and support A-League clubs as well and pay money for Fox Sports subscriptions, and they have to put up with this. It's got to stop, and it's got to stop now. I'm telling you now, this has gone beyond tipping point. You are experimenting with players' livelihoods and people's livelihoods.
Wow, yeah. Look, Bozza's obviously he's a passionate savage guy, but it really he's not happy.
He is fired up about that, and with rightly so, I think.
Yeah, look, and I think it sort of... I'd like to put a bit of a different spin on this, guys, because, like, VAR, it's controversial, it gets people upset and animated, and we saw that with Bozza and with the Western Sydney Wanderers manager, how he got sent off as well. But, look, I guess, does this kind of... I'd like to put a different spin on this. And we've talked previously in sort of unrelated issues about, I guess, football's problem that it has with, I guess, respecting referees' decisions and how it's not a good look. And it's brought up in Australia by some of football's critics saying that, in football, like, everyone just crowds around the ref and they're all acting like pork chops and so on and so on. But does this represent, a big issue or a symptom of that sort of problem that football has with officiating, that no one actually respects the referee's decision and no one just gets on with the game? And look, you saw Western Sydney Wanderers, they never really recovered from that moment. And if they had have just gone, all right, Warner on the chin and said, let's crack on, let's create another chance. Instead, emotionally, they were still stuck in that incident and never recovered from it and never got back into the game. They never really looked like scoring for the remainder of the game. So, and obviously the manager spitting the dummy as well, like that sort of, that reinforces that, oh, well, if the manager does that, like, we're kind of off the hook a little bit performance-wise because the manager's lost his head. Well, we don't have to focus and I guess, look on to just scoring a goal. So what do you guys think about that? Is it sort of symptomatic of that, or is it... what does football do to solve this problem?
Yeah, Tommy, I definitely think you're right. I don't think that there is that cultural problem in Australia. But the difference here is that, before pre-VAR days, and if the ref and linesman and or linesman decides that that incident is a foul, which they didn't, to be fair, in this case, then the foul gets called and the goal doesn't get scored and everyone just has to accept it. And you query whether if that foul gets called straight away, you don't see the goal, you don't see the ball go into the net, and it might just be a promising attacking situation and the players are a little bit annoyed and they go on with it. But the thing that the VAR does is it pulls back a goal. Like, the players are celebrating, the crowd's celebrating, the momentum's with them there, the shift's there, and that's why it sucks the life out of the game. And I think it's a lot harder to just sort of accept that something sort of, when something's sort of taken away from you. And we did talk about this last week when we talked about the VAR incident in the Melbourne derby as well, that led to, because that was the sort of the opposite thing, right? It was something that wasn't a thing, and then a goal was given and the other side just had to be like, right, well, you know, it's 1-1 now, let's get on with it. Like you said, and they were annoyed about it, and I think, yeah, you're right, like, the culture could and should have changed in that situation were we to have it again, where you just sort of get on with things. But yeah, in this situation, I think VAR really created the problem there by just
exacerbated an existing like issue that the game has.
I think you're right, Tommy, actually, because I think the culture of, like, as you were saying, you know, players surrounding refs and really getting in their face and showing lack of respect, which I'm instantly thinking of rugby, which it just doesn't happen, you know. Anything like that, you can't even talk to the referee unless you're the captain.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and I think the VAR and the what nature of the way it's being used is just fueling that culture. Yeah. It's going to create it, you know, make it even worse. Yeah.
It's a problem that, like, FIFA and I can't remember the organisation that looks at the rules, but they've done a really good job of sort of managing the rules of the game and managing the sport over the last sort of, like, 40 years, where they've brought in different rules, like outlawing the tackle from behind and outlawing the back pass and these kind of things and pushing the game in the right direction. And something like this, you say, this is... I'm talking about sort of that disrespecting the officials. Mm. And it's funny because I'm a known referee pest. But it does, it's a problem that football has, and it's a problem that needs to be addressed, I guess, at that sort of rulemaking level to say, well, we need to do something about this because it's sort of undermining our sport at the moment. At all levels, like from amateur level, guilty hand raised, through to elite levels. And I think it's, if anything, it's much worse at the elite level.
And I think you throw in the mix, in this, like, case in point, the decision was just poor. So yeah, you throw in the mix that, obviously, the culture, even if it's the right decision, players get up in the face of the ref, right? But in this case, the decision was poor and VAR didn't get it right.
And it pulled a goal back, because that's something that doesn't happen pre-VAR. Mm. And I think we said this last week with respect to the VAR decision in that game. You know, if you're going to get it wrong, if you're going to engage VAR, you need to come up with the correct decision.
Agreed.
And that's it. Yeah. You can't get it wrong, and you certainly can't get it wrong but in back-to-back weeks in the game. Mm. And so
I hate that we're even talking so much about VAR. Yeah. No one's talked anything about the football.
No.
From the two weekends of the A-League, it's all just been about VAR, which is excruciating.
And the sad thing about it is that it happens in the moments that people like us love the game for. So it happens in the moments where someone's just scored, or it's at those pivotal moments.
And it's 2-1, you've got half an hour to play. Exactly. We could have a real game on our hands here, and then they've just wrecked it.
Yeah, they've just crushed it.
But the other point there is, and as we heard in Boz's rant, he's calling for VAR to be suspended or binned. You just can't do that. Like, as much as we'd all like it, you can't
change the rules halfway through the season.
You cannot change the rules halfway through the season. It would just be the absolute worst look. And if you're throwing out one thing halfway through the season, it sets a real precedent for fans and other stakeholders of the game holding it to ransom.
Lack of control from those that are
so
in charge.
That, I mean, as much as I sort of sympathise and I agree that in this instance they cocked it up and they absolutely wrecked what would otherwise have been a cracking game of football, which we'd all be talking about, you just can't chop and change halfway through. We need to just stick with this and get it right. And if we didn't see it in Russia used so effectively, and so seamlessly, to be honest, I might have a different view, but I think we just need to work on actually just getting it right.
Do you remember we were talking about VAR on the More Than A Game Facebook page a couple months ago, I think, or weeks ago, I can't remember. And there were some people, so for example, Steve Chilvert, he said, how could you not be in favour of VAR? But like, I showed people this and go, like, it's not working. Like, it's horrible at the moment. It's painful. It shouldn't be, because, like, and like you said, like, in Russia it was so effective.
Mm.
But it's just excruciatingly frustrating at the moment.
Because even in Russia, like, it was being used early in the group stage. It was coming out quite frequently. I think we saw one or two VAR instances in each game. And then after that, we saw it being used a little bit less. And so clearly someone's had a word like, look, just
dial back,
just chill out, just dial out on the VAR, cool, unless it's clear and obvious. And they really got it right. Yeah. Like, there was only probably one sort of questionable incident, and that was actually in the final. But the game didn't turn on that, and it wasn't. They didn't actually get it wrong. It was more of a 50-50 call, that one. But we need to see something a little bit more like that, and I think it's something that can work. What about we talk about some football, though, boys?
Right.
There's still a couple of games to play this weekend. We might actually see some football. So A-League tipping corner or slash preview. We've got the Roar playing Wellington Phoenix, and that one's getting underway pretty shortly. Go on the Knicks.
7 minutes it took.
Steezy's A-League team, the Wellington Phoenix.
Side.
Yeah. The Knucks.
Yeah, so there've been lots of draws actually in their past. But Roy Krishna looks in good form. Brisbane created a lot of chances against Central Coast last week. Could have scored 5. Hard to see Brisbane not doing that again at home, boys. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd love to see Phoenix get another win. I would absolutely love that, but I don't think they're going to do it. I just don't think they have enough
on the road in Brisbane.
On the road, yeah. I don't think they've got enough in the locker to pull a win out of their bag.
Score predictions?
1-1 from me.
Whoa. Are you a betting man?
Put some money on that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to say 3-1 to the Raw.
Yeah, I'll go 2-1. I reckon Phoenix will try. Yeah, I reckon it will go a draw, and then they'll nick it, the Raw, at the end.
They'll nook it?
They'll nook. Yeah, they'll get a nook.
closing out the weekend of A-League football, we've got Melbourne Victory hosting Perth Glory. Ola Toivonen is still out for this match, but Muscat's confirmed that KSK Honda will play after suffering a knock during training this week.
A knock.
So Perth, meanwhile, will be without Castro, Jacob Italiano and Brendan Santelab, though Sporanovic could be in line to make his first appearance for the club. Boys of Perth are going to challenge, as many pundits and fans alike are saying that they will this season under Popper. This is the kind of game you'd think against this kind of opposition, Melbourne Victory. Perth have to come over and do something. They have to come over and get something out of the road, and they have to perform well. What do you think about this one? Predictions?
Well, interesting. A funny story. I actually bumped into Honda on my way to work. Yeah.
Just casual? Actually,
he was best mates.
No, yeah. He looks good. I reckon he's
been holding on to this story.
Yeah. Kept it under my hat. You know, you've got to come into these things with a bit in your locker, haven't you?
Exclusive,
yeah. No, actually, I was on my bike and just he was crossing the road and I was like, I said g'day to him. And I was like, hey, you know, I just said, hey. And he was like, hey, where are you up to? He's like, I'm just going to meet my agent for a coffee. I was like, oh, good on you. And then off we go. Off for another working day. But yeah, no, he looks good. I could see it in his eyes. I reckon he might get a goal.
Hungry.
Yeah, he's hungry. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
So I reckon, Victory will get that. They'll take the win there. 2-1.
Interesting. I think Perth will get up 2-0. I think if Toivonen's not playing, I think they're going to struggle up front this year with just Kincannie there.
2-1 Perth for me. I think Perth are going to do them on the road, and I think Troisi is going to get a goal for the Victory. I think Honda's going to play okay, but Perth are going to be too good for them. Mm.
Okay, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Thanks for joining us, Timmy. I hope you've enjoyed your More Than a Game debut. It's been a pleasure having you on board.
Pleasure to be here, mate. Thanks for the invite. Loved it.
Excellent. We'll be back same time next week with more football chat. Don't forget to check out More Than a Game on Facebook and Twitter for more great football content. Also, don't forget to rate us on iTunes or whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. Until next week, though, enjoy the football.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.